The Witch's Halloween Hero, A Nocturne Falls Short, written by Kristen Painter, narrated by B.J. Harrison. Chapter 1. Bartholomew Stanhill stood on the front porch of Corette Williams' house, not quite sorted enough to knock. He smoothed the lapels of his tuxedo one more time with his free hand. In his other, he carried a small shopping bag that held a box with two Halloween cupcakes in it and a clear clamshell containing a stunning tiger lily corsage. He was totally prepared for this evening. There was nothing to be worried about. After all, his entire life was about preparation. Tonight was no exception. He took a breath and lifted his hand, then hesitated and put it down again. His nerves weren't because tonight's event, the Black and Orange Ball, was the biggest social event of the year in Nocturne Falls. Social events were all part and parcel with living in this town. No, his nerves were because of the small velvet box in his jacket pocket, the one holding the exquisite sapphire and diamond engagement ring he'd picked out for Corette. Tonight was the night. He was going to ask her to marry him. Granted, their lives would never be normal. Corette was a witch with three grown daughters who were also witches, and between them and her bridal shop in town, her life was a whirlwind of activity, although she always made time for him. Stanhill was a rook for Hugh Ellingham, one of the founders of Nocturne Falls, and an almost 400-year-old vampire. Stanhill was slightly older, but in his own opinion, the touch of gray that Hugh would never have was his lordship's loss. Being a rook meant Stanhill had the immortality of a vampire with a half measure of a vampire's strength and speed. But it also meant he couldn't be too far from Hugh. Any distance too great, and they would both suffer. Stanhill had known the risks and conditions before Hugh had turned him into a rook. But it had been a choice between life or death, as would have been forthcoming from the plague that was ravaging those around them. And as Hugh's former valet, a life of service was one he was comfortable with. So choosing life, even with all that being a rook entailed, had been the right decision, especially now that Corette was a part of that life. After all these years, she'd taught him that love was still possible. It was an unbelievable gift. He glanced into the bag at the corsage he'd brought and smiled, thinking about the winsome witch. Tonight would be one for the memory books. He finally brought his knuckles up to the door. He knocked three times, then stood back to wait. A moment later, his beloved opened the door. In a split second, he took Corette in. Her black satin gown accentuated her brilliantly curved figure with the perfection of old Hollywood. Her deep auburn hair matched the look as it fell in coiffed waves around her beautiful face. She offered him a soft smile, but the light in her eyes he was accustomed to seeing wasn't there. Was she nervous about something, too? She pulled the door a little wider. Hello.
Hello, love.
He knew what they both needed, a reminder of what mattered. He stepped inside, pulled her into his arms, and kissed her soundly. Her hands flew up to his chest and shoved him away. What are you doing? His mouth came open in shock at her reaction. But before he could respond, Pandora, Corette's flame-haired middle daughter, flew around the corner and into the foyer. Stanhill, don't you look handsome? Good to see you. Sort of. Oh, bother, I was afraid this would happen. Her mouth bunched to one side as she glanced at Corette. Mom, I said I would get the door.
Afraid what would happen? He asked.
Corette pointed at Stanhill, eyes snapping with anger.
This man kissed me.
Stanhill stared at her, befuddled as to why that was a problem.
You've never complained about it before.
Pandora gave her mother a stern look. Mom, Marigold needs you in the kitchen. Now. Corette shot Stanhill an accusatory glare before stalking off. He watched her go, totally confused.
What the devil is going on?
Pandora sighed and shoved a hand through her hair. We had a little mishap with a spell.
We? That doesn't sound like your mother.
Not her. Me and Marigold and Charisma. Mom was upstairs getting ready, and we were in her spell room, using her supplies because none of us had everything necessary, and this was a big spell. You know Missy Tressler? She just got dumped by her boyfriend by text.
Text? Can you believe it?
Anyway, she came to Marigold for a spell to forget the creep. But like I said, it's a big spell, and it takes three of us. And so we came over here to get everything together and work our magic, as it were. She smiled brightly, causing Stanhill no small amount of bewilderment. He blinked as he went back over her conversation, but nowhere in all of what she'd said could he find the issue.
Not sure I'm following, love. That still doesn't explain why your mother was shocked by me kissing her.
Her smile disappeared. Oh yes, that. Mom sort of walked in while we were finishing up and startled us, and my elbow hit the cauldron, and she caught it before it went over, but the spell works splashed onto her.
Stanhill got a sinking feeling.
What was this spell again?
Pandora bit her lip. For Missy Tressler to forget her awful ex-boyfriend. She was really broken up by getting dumped. He held on to a small shred of hope.
So your mother wasn't affected by this, then?
No. Well, yes. Sort of.
That hope slipped from his fingers.
Bloody hell. What does that mean?
It means... Who's there, darling?
Corette's voice called out as she strolled into the foyer. Her gown swirled around her as she came to a stop, and this time her sparkling green eyes lit up when she saw Stanhill.
I didn't know we were having company. Are we all going to the ball together?
Pandora sighed. Double bother. Apparently Mom's having some memory issues on top of everything else.
What's everything else?
Stanhill asked. But Corette interrupted him by making a disapproving noise with her tongue.
Pandora, I'm having no such thing. I'm sure I'd remember our guest if we'd met before, although I'd be happy to make your acquaintance now.
She offered Stanhill her hand.
Corette Williams, and you are?
He took her hand, his body numb with the realization that his beloved no longer knew him. Was this what Pandora was talking about? It had to be.
Bartholomew Stanhill, the man you've been dating for the past 4 years.
Mom, you have to remember Stanhill. You two are like peas and carrots. You're together all the time. He comes over for Saturday night family suppers.
Not to mention, Stanhill thought, he'd just had his mouth on hers a few minutes ago. Had his kiss been that forgettable? Corette held on to his hand and leaned closer, peering at him like he was a curiosity in an antique shop.
I don't think so. I'd remember you.
Her gaze raked him up and down. Love the tux.
You should. You sold it to me.
She smiled and finally let go of his hand. I have wonderful taste.
Yes, you do. I'm your date for the ball tonight.
She put her hands on her hips.
So we are going to the ball together. Excellent. I'd hate to think I looked this good and had no one to escort me.
Just then Marigold strode into the foyer, her purse in one hand and a tablet in the other.
Hi, Stanhill. I guess you heard?
I did.
She frowned.
I'm so sorry. Even sorrier that I have to go. As always, I'm in charge of the flowers, and I'm helping Delaney organize the last of the decorating. I should already be there, actually.
I understand.
She pushed a curly blonde tendril out of her eyes. I promise, the minute I'm done, I'm back here and working on this... issue.
He nodded. Go. You can't keep the Ellinghams waiting.
Thanks.
She kissed him on the cheek as she left. It's going to be all right, I swear.
I know.
He hoped that was true. He glanced at Corette, who was watching him intently.
You look beautiful, by the way. But then you always look beautiful.
Her smile went from bright to beaming. Aren't you a charmer?
Mom,
Pandora sighed in frustration. You really can't remember Stanhill?
Corette shook her head, but her eyes stayed on him.
No. I guess your magic really is fully functional again, sweetheart.
She stepped closer to Stanhill.
Do you still want to take me to the ball?
I do.
Whether or not Corette remembered him, he couldn't imagine being with anyone else, nor did he want to. He lifted the corsage he'd brought her out of the shopping bag.
Here's your bit of orange.
She took the clear plastic case, popped it open, and lifted the flower free.
I know you're supposed to do the honors, but considering I don't know you from Adam at the moment, how about we let Pandora do it?
He nodded. Whatever makes you happy.
While Pandora fixed the corsage to her mother's dress, Stanhill took a moment to gather a little more information.
How long will the spell last?
Pandora's brows knit.
Why don't we talk about that once I have this corsage attached, okay?
She laughed nervously. You know I can't talk and chew gum.
That wasn't the Pandora he knew at all. She must have something to tell him that she didn't want to reveal in front of her mother.
Pandora steadied the flower in place while she attached the super-strong magnets that would hold it there without damaging the gown.
There you go, Mom. Oh, it's so pretty. Go show Charisma and have her take a picture so Mary can see it when she gets back.
Corette made a face. Honey, she's going to the ball. She'll see it there.
With all the work she's got to do, she might not. And since it came from her shop...
Corette kissed her daughter's cheek.
I'll be right back.
She glanced at Stanhill on her way out.
Maybe I'll remember you by then.
He put a hand to his heart.
I can hope.
She won't,
Pandora said when Corette had left. The spell wasn't built that way. She let out a deep sigh.
This is awful. And on Samhain of all nights.
What aren't you telling me? Is there more to this than your mother understands?
No, she knows all of this. But I feel like talking about it in front of her is going to reinforce the negatives, and I'd rather not do that.
Pandora frowned.
What I haven't told you yet is that the spell becomes permanent at midnight, and there's no failsafe built in. Missy didn't want one. She wanted a complete and total wipe. We thought that was kind of severe, but we'd do what our clients want.
Okay, but it's not permanent yet. That means you can still undo it.
Pandora shook her head.
We can't. It's done.
You just said it becomes permanent at midnight. That means it's not permanent now. Why can't you fix it?
Because it's already in motion.
Pandora frowned.
And the midnight thing is because it's Samhain, Halloween.
She waved her hands in the air.
On this night, at the witching hour, a lot of magic things can occur. Certain spells becoming permanent is just one of them.
What does that mean, then? She'll never be able to love me again?
Not just that. But at midnight, if we don't find a counterspell, you will disappear from her life completely.
You can't just make me go away.
In a way, we can. She won't see you or hear you or have any idea you're around. You could be in the same room with her, and she'd have no idea.
Are you bleeding kidding me?
No, it's what Missy wanted.
Do you always give people what they want?
Like I said, when they're paying for a spell, we try, yes.
Stanhill mumbled a few curses.
Look, we're going to do our best to figure something out, and we will, I think. But in the meantime, you need to do your level best to make her fall for you again. Right now, it's the only thing we can come up with that might break the spell.
Your mother's a stubborn woman. She wouldn't go out with me for the first 2 months I asked.
True, but she seems to think you're cute. That's a start, right?
Sure, if you're adopting a puppy. You seem to be forgetting that she didn't like me kissing her. Then she couldn't remember it.
He sighed.
You have to find a way to make this right. I can't lose your mother. I love her.
Pandora put a hand on his arm.
I know. Just make sure she does, too.
Corette walked into the kitchen where her other daughter was. Charisma was at the counter, deep in serious discussion with herself, a habit she'd had since she was a little girl. It had been adorable then. Now it had become one of the tenets of her life coaching services.
What are you talking about in such ominous tones? You'd think someone died. Aren't you going to the ball?
Not this year, Mom. Charisma turned toward her and smiled weakly. I see Stanhill gave you the corsage. Her hand went to it.
It's lovely. Mary did a wonderful job.
All of her daughters were extremely talented.
Yes, she did.
Charisma's gaze took on a more thoughtful glint. So, what do you think of Stanhill?
He's handsome enough.
He was ridiculously handsome, but Corette was reluctant to admit that about a man she'd just met.
I like the British accent, too. Looks like a little bit of a playboy, though, don't you think?
Pandora came in. Did you just call Stanhill a playboy?
Yes, she did.
Charisma glanced at her sister before answering.
He's not at all, Mom. He's a stand-up guy who's been there for you every time you've needed him. For all of us, really. We all love him.
Corette leaned against the counter, careful not to wrinkle her gown. She'd special ordered it from her Paris couturier, just for the ball. It had cost more than her last two black and orange ball gowns combined, but it was silk and stunning, and she knew she looked amazing in it. She just couldn't remember why she'd gone to such extravagance. Your father was a handsome man, and everyone loved him, including his secretary.
Stanhill's not a cheater, Mom.
Pandora crossed her arms. He's nothing like Dad. Nothing.
He's handsome, Corette countered.
They have that in common.
So do a lot of other guys, Charisma answered. That doesn't make them cheaters.
Exactly, Pandora said. Now go to the ball and keep an open mind.
Corette shrugged and collected her purse and wrap from the counter. She knew her daughters meant well, but her decisions were hers alone.
I always have an open mind, but I'm not interested in getting into another relationship so soon after the last one.
Mom, Charisma shook her head.
Other than Dad, which was decades ago, there was no last relationship. Everything you're feeling is just residual from Missy's personal stuff that went into her spell.
Well, it feels real.
Corette tossed her wrap around her shoulders.
And right now, fun is the only thing I feel like having. I plan to dance with every man who'll have me tonight.
Pandora groaned and put her hand on her head.
Charisma, we need to figure this out and fast.
I hear you, Charisma answered. Mary needs to get back here as soon as she can.
Pandora nodded.
She will.
Corette gave them both her best withering, mother-knows-best look.
Honestly, the two of you act like I'm in desperate need of a man. I'm not.
No, you're not, and no woman should be. But you were in love with Stanhill until that potion splashed onto your arm.
Charisma took Corette's hand.
You deserve to be happy, and Stanhill does that for you. Besides, we don't want to see either of you hurt because of this accident.
Corette patted her daughter's hand.
I am happy. I have you girls and a darling granddaughter. What else could I need in life?
Speaking of Safi, Pandora said, Stanhill brought her and Charlie Merrow cupcakes from Delaney. How did he know we were babysitting her and Charlie tonight?
No idea,
Charisma shook her head. But he always seems to know that stuff.
Pandora gave Corette a thin smile. He'll be waiting for you in the foyer by now.
I hope everything works out. I'm really sorry I tipped that stupid cauldron over.
Corette tucked her evening bag beneath her arm and cupped Pandora's face in her hands.
Stop apologizing. No harm's been done. You all say I was in love with him, but I can't remember that, so it's not like I'm suffering.
Pandora's frown remained.
You would be if you could see things from our side. You have your phone, right?
Corette patted her evening bag.
Of course.
Good. Keep checking it. We'll message you the minute we have the counterspell to this worked out. If it's a potion, one of us will run it over to the Ellingham estate, so don't go traipsing off.
I don't traipse, Corette said. Honestly, I wish you'd all just give up on this silliness and come to the ball with me. Pandora, put a dress on and call Cole.
Mom, I can't. You know he's out taking Kaylee trick-or-treating. This is her first Halloween here. I'm not making her give that up.
And besides, I need to be here working on this mess.
Charisma nodded. Agreed. This takes precedence. Marigold will tell you the same thing. She'd probably also tell you that Saffron will freak if she finds out Stanhill won't be around anymore because of something her mother and aunts did. I can't have my niece looking at me like I'm a monster.
Corette smiled at the thought of her granddaughter.
Saffy likes Stanhill that much?
Charisma snorted.
Did you hear the part about how he brought her and Charlie cupcakes tonight? He brings her a cookie from Delaney's Delectables every time he sees her, which is clearly a level of planning we should all be in awe of. The man is gold, Mom. Now go have fun, and seriously, don't dance with anyone but him.
Corette gave her daughters a long glance.
I'll dance with whomever I please, but your words have given me a lot to think about.
She lifted her hand in a little wave.
Love you both.
Love you more,
they responded in unison. Awash in affection for her girls, Corette headed to the foyer. Stanhill stood there, waiting patiently. He was remarkably handsome with that kind of salt-and-pepper, well-aged, proper British thing going on, and looked to be in phenomenal shape, although a tux could hide a multitude of sins. He smiled when he saw her, his eyes coming to life with a dazzling glitter that sent a shiver of curious anticipation over her. Could it be that her body remembered him when her mind did not?
That raised all sorts of questions, and in her current state of being, she didn't seem to have any of her usual inhibitions that might have prevented her from asking. Not that she had many inhibitions to begin with, but a proper Southern woman didn't talk about certain things. Fortunately, she was a witch first and a proper Southern woman second. She sidled up to him in the hopes of getting a few answers.
He smiled at her. Ready to go?
In a moment. I have some questions.
He held his arms out.
I'm an open book, love.
His accent trilled over her skin, more attractive than it should have been.
You look at me like we've been intimate. Have we?
He swallowed, and the sparks in his eyes turned to heat lightning. His arms came to rest at his sides, and even through the fabric of his tux, she could see his body tighten in response, a body that looked like it had very few soft spots. Yes.
More than once?
He nodded, a taut, barely controlled movement that spoke volumes. Oh, yes.
I see.
Based on the way her skin was tingling, her body definitely remembered him.
And I take it those occurrences were mutually enjoyable?
Hell yes. Heat rose through her. She blamed it on the satin. It wasn't the most breathable fabric. She took a deep breath.
I see.
Bloody shame you don't remember.
She agreed with him, but wasn't about to tell him that.
We should go.
He offered her the crook of his arm. The bowl awaits.
She slipped her arm through his, happy to feel that the body beneath the tux was as hard and trim as it looked. A second later, a sense of déjà vu passed through her.
Have we done this before?
Gone to the bowl?
Yes.
He nodded. Every year, for the past 4 years.
People expect to see us together at this event then, don't they?
Yes.
She blinked, thinking through the possibilities.
I don't want them to know there's anything amiss with me. You'll keep my secret, won't you?
Seriousness shone in his gaze. I would do anything for you. Keeping your secret will not be a hardship, but may I ask why? Are you worried someone could use it against you?
She took a breath, then nodded slowly.
It's Samhain, and I'm under the influence of magic. My own could even be compromised. I just think it's best if no one else knows.
He put his hand over hers, his large, warm palm reassuring against her knuckles. Perhaps we shouldn't go. She snorted softly.
I may not remember you, but I remember how much I paid for this dress. We're going.
Chapter 2. Escorting Corette was as easy for Stanhill as breathing. But the ball had been underway for half an hour, and there still hadn't been word from her girls about a counterspell. Corette had warmed to him a little since their discussion in the foyer about their intimate past, but every once in a while he caught her looking at him with a sort of appraising glance he'd seen her use on indecisive brides in her shop. She was either trying to figure him out or decide if he was worth the effort, all while the engagement ring sat heavy in his pocket. He couldn't give it to her now, not like this. She'd never agree to marry him, and rightly so. But time was running out. What if giving her the ring was just the thing to bring her memories of him back? What if giving her the ring could make her love him again? Hugh Ellingham walked up to him. "What's eating you?"
"Nothing."
Hugh sipped his wine.
"Liar."
They'd known each other too long. It was hard to hide anything from someone who knew you so well.
"Shouldn't you be dancing with your wife?"
"Delaney's in the kitchen giving the caterers instructions about the cake."
"And shouldn't you be dancing with Corette?"
Hugh looked around.
"Where is she?"
"Marigold needed her for an opinion on the flowers. By now they might be in the kitchen with Delaney for all I know." Hugh frowned. "A night out with Corette usually puts you in a better mood." Stanhill sighed and glanced around.
"Things are not going the way I'd hoped this evening."
"You still plan on proposing?"
"I have no bloody idea."
Hugh clapped him on the shoulder.
"Nerves? Hell no."
Stanhill's gut clenched.
"You can't tell a soul. But there was a little mishap at Corette's this evening. Some witchcraft gone wrong."
Hugh's brows shot up.
"And?" "And she's not in love with me anymore."
"Bloody hell."
"Exactly. I assume her daughters are working on it."
Stanhill gazed toward the kitchen, looking for Corette.
"Yes. But you don't think you should propose until they've fixed it."
That brought Stanhill's head around.
"You sound like you think otherwise."
"What if that kind of declaration is enough to put things right?"
"I thought the same thing."
"But what if it isn't?"
"Then you've lost her."
"But that could be the exact same result of doing nothing tonight, too."
"Damn good point."
Stanhill swallowed the last of his whiskey.
"I won't be the first chap to have gotten turned down." "Love is an awful thing, isn't it?"
"Not for you, you fanged muppet. You're blissfully happy with Delaney." Hugh smiled, showing off those fangs.
"True. But I almost wasn't.
And I was willing to risk more than rejection to have her by my side for eternity.
Trust your heart, Stanhill. This will all work out. I'm sure of it."
"Easy for you to say.
But I see your point."
"Then you'll ask her?"
Stanhill nodded.
"I really don't have much choice, do I? I'll consider it strongly."
Hugh's smile faded. "And if it doesn't work?"
Stanhill stared into his empty glass, then raised it.
"I'm going to need a lot more of these."
Corette stood back and took a hard look at the enormous arrangement her daughter was fixing in the main dining room. It was so large, Marigold had to use a stepladder to work on the upper sections. As the centerpiece of the space, the arrangement she did every year had become the traditional background for many of the black and orange ball photographs.
"It's beautiful, Mary. You really outdid yourself this year."
Marigold sighed and peered out from behind a swath of green.
"Mom, they're lopsided."
Corette shook her head.
"I think it looks artistic."
"Well, Eleonora won't think that. She's pretty old school when it comes to things she likes and doesn't like." Marigold leaned into the flowers again. Corette studied her daughter. She wasn't just a pretty face. Marigold was a deft touch at flowers, and her skills as a green witch were extraordinary. But the area she truly excelled at was motherhood. Corette's heart ached for all her girls to find love, although Pandora seemed well on her way to marriage. But with Marigold, it wasn't just about her finding love. It was also about sweet Safi getting a wonderful stepdaddy. Corette glanced around to see if there were any eligible bachelors she might introduce her daughter to. A passel of servers bustled past with the final touches for the many, many tables, that would hold the 500 or so guests about to descend. They all looked too busy to stop.
Corette sighed. I promise you they're beautiful. And I promise you, Eleonora's standards are very different.
That's for sure.
Delaney Ellingham walked over, looking splendid in another custom gown from Ever After. She held a tray of pétiffors, but quickly handed them off to a server.
Put these on the North Buffet.
She smiled at Corette.
Hi, how are you? You look fantastic. Is that the dress you special ordered?
Hi, Delaney. And thank you. Yes, this is it. I have to say you look fabulous in that dress as well.
Delaney grinned.
And I have you to thank.
She did a twirl, floating the layers of shimmering black chiffon out around her, then steadied herself and called up to Marigold.
Where are those sprays for the cake table? I need to get them up. Eleonora wants to open the dining room in exactly 15 minutes.
Marigold popped out of the flowers again.
They're in 3 big white boxes in the middle walk-in.
She grinned.
You do look fabulous. Very Ginger Rogers. Speaking of, where's Fred?
Delaney laughed.
He was out there with Stanhill. The two of them are hugging the wall like they're afraid Bertie Carruthers might ask them to dance.
Marigold snorted.
I'd pay money to see that.
Delaney nudged Corette with her elbow.
Can't let Bertie get her hooks in Stanhill, or you may never see him again.
Corette frowned as a surprising wash of jealousy temporarily shaded her vision green.
You think he'd be that easily wooed away?
No, I was just teasing. Delaney made a face.
I think he'd be more likely to run away screaming. I mean, Stanhill with a werewolf? I can't even.
Oh, no, that wouldn't do at all, would it? Corette made herself laugh.
Why was she feeling jealous over Stanhill? She wasn't in love with him. Although she had to admit, he was very easy to spend time with. Was she feeling something for him, after just a few hours?
Of course, if what her girl said was true, she'd known him for years, and definitely was in love with him.
The whole thing was such a mess, and so very confusing.
Delaney shot Marigold a look, but said nothing.
Right. Okay, gotta run. Gotta get that cake table set up.
With a wave, she swanned off in a cloud of chiffon. Marigold climbed down off the ladder.
Mom, have you checked your phone? Any word from Pandy and Charisma?
No, I haven't.
She dipped her hand into her evening bag, retrieved the phone, and tapped the screen to life.
One message. Charisma says, try love's true kiss.
Corette dropped the phone back into her bag and gave Marigold a little smile.
Your sister always thinks that's the answer.
You've thought it yourself a few times,
Marigold shrugged.
Couldn't hurt to try.
He kissed me at the house. It did nothing.
Nothing?
Marigold narrowed her gaze.
You didn't get any reaction from it?
Corette tipped her head coyly. A lady doesn't kiss and tell.
Marigold clapped her hands in obvious excitement.
You're starting to feel something for him, aren't you?
Maybe.
But that didn't change the fact that she'd been burned very badly once before. In theory, she knew her divorce had happened years ago, but it felt so fresh.
He's a very nice man.
Oh, come on! He's Stanhill! He's a total silver fox, and nice is the kiss of death. He deserves better than that.
Marigold, this isn't something you can make happen through sheer force of will. After your father's betrayal, you can't expect me to fall in love in a matter of moments.
Mom, you've known Stanhill for years. Been in love with him for at least 4.
Marigold held her hands up. They were stained with chlorophyll.
I know you don't feel or remember any of that because of the accident, but trust me.
I do trust you, my darling. But I can't just love someone because...
The side door opened, and Eleonora Ellingham swept in. Her secretary, and one of the oldest and most secretive witches Corette knew, Alice Bishop, swept in behind her. Alice was the oft-absent head of the local coven, and, in traditional Alice style, wore simple, unadorned black. Eleonora was in full-length burnt-orange dupioni silk, with a shocking amount of rubies at her throat, wrists, and ears. The matriarch of the Ellingham clan cast her vampire gaze upon them.
Marigold.
Then she turned slightly.
Corrad. Eleonora?
Both women replied.
Are we ready?
She eyed them curiously, as if guessing she'd interrupted something that wasn't official black and orange ball business.
I'm opening the doors for dinner shortly. I can't give my guests access to open bars without also providing them food.
5 minutes, Eleonora, and everything will be perfect.
Marigold smiled nervously.
I'll leave you to it,
Corette whispered as she patted her daughter's arm. Then she nodded at Alice.
Nice to see you, Alice.
Alice nodded back, her sharp eyes barely blinking. Corette made her way out, but stopped in the ladies' room to check her makeup, slipping her lipstick from her purse. She blinked into the mirror, her mind elsewhere, like how she was feeling about Stanhill and what her options were. Alice was one. She rarely mixed with the other witches. Corette was the coven secretary and barely knew her. Every once in a while, Alice might show up at a coven meeting if she had an announcement, but the woman was an anomaly, and in a town like Nocturne Falls, that was saying something. Word was her power was old and ancient, and derived from the lives of her sister witches, lost in the Salem trials. Alice was the sole survivor, thanks to Eleonora's intervention. Which was why Alice never left Eleonora's side, and why she'd helped the Ellinghams create Nocturne Falls and the spell that kept it safe. Corette straightened and stared back toward the dining room. If Alice Bishop was powerful enough to bespell the town's water supply, with a charm to keep human visitors from suspecting its inhabitants were true supernaturals, what else was the woman capable of? Erasing the evening's earlier mishap would probably be nothing for her. But that would mean Corette would have to confess what had happened. She would be vulnerable, possibly in danger of losing her status as coven secretary. And while Corette made it a policy to trust her sister witches, Alice Bishop was cut from a very different cloth. Corette tucked her lipstick into her bag. Best Alice not know anything about what had happened, at least not until things became desperate. Right now, Corette was rather enjoying being the focus of Stanhill's evening. The banter and flirting were all highly entertaining, and it was flattering to be the center of such a handsome man's attention. There was also no point in denying she had begun to feel something for him. She clutched her purse tightly. What if she really had been in love with him? What if he was her last chance to find love again? That chance would vanish at midnight. She knew that. Samhain had a way of making permanent any loose magic. The thought sent a little shiver of fear through her. She wasn't afraid of being alone. Her daughter's presence in her life meant that was impossible. But losing a good man, and being the reason that man's heart was broken, that wasn't something Corette wanted on her soul for the rest of her days. She opened her purse, took out her phone, and dialed. Pandora answered on the second ring.
Mom, are you all right?
I'm fine. I have an idea.
Chapter 3. Stanhill smiled as Corette joined him.
Hello, love.
She smiled back with more certainty than he'd seen in her all evening.
Hello.
Everything all right with the flowers?
She nodded.
Marigold's got things well under control.
That's quite the talented trio of girls you've got there. Just as smart and beautiful as their mother.
Her dark eyes held his gaze.
Have you always been such a charmer?
He took her hand and ran his thumb over her delicate knuckles. There was no teasing in her words, just genuine interest. He took that as a positive sign.
You know that I...
He stopped and laughed at the bittersweet moment.
I guess you don't know. Not anymore.
Her smile was kind.
Tell me.
Do you remember that I'm a rook?
No, but that would mean you're practically a vampire.
He nodded.
Correct. And as such, I am very old, nearly 400 years.
He continued.
My entire life, both as human and rook, has been spent in service. I was Hugh's valet before he turned me.
Being a rook is still a form of service.
It is.
but with many more freedoms and benefits."
Her mouth turned into a coy smile. "I assume he dresses himself now, too."
"Yes, thank the bloody stars."
She laughed, the most beautiful sound. "Still, service is service."
"It is indeed. And because of that, I learned early on to watch my words, to temper my moods, to be careful in my speech. It shaped me. Hugh was never an exceedingly hard lord to serve, but we were from two different worlds. He was a peer, I was a commoner. Now that gulf between us is gone, but I cannot change the man I am."
Her smile thinned. "So you're saying that you've just been telling me what I want to hear?"
"No, I'm trying, and failing, to tell you that what you see with me is what you get. And I am my truest self around you, my darling Corette. I always have been. I always will be. You have the unique ability to boil people down to their essence. I don't know if it's witchcraft or the makeup of your character, but you don't suffer fools lightly, and it's one of the things I adore about you the most."
"That's very sweet of you to say." He took her hand again, allowing himself the indulgence of caressing her soft skin. Touching her felt like a delicious, guilty pleasure. He kept his focus on her hand, afraid he would be overcome if he said what he needed to say while looking into her eyes.
"I don't know what's going to become of us after tonight, but if our time together ends this evening, I will still consider myself the luckiest man alive to have had you in my life for this long."
He started to let go of her hand, but she held on, causing him to lift his face to hers. Her eyes were liquid with emotion. "I don't know what will become of us either, Stanhill, but I'm starting to feel very much that I hope tonight is not the end of our time together."
His breath caught in his throat for a moment, held there by a bubble of hope that had welled up in him so unexpectedly, it took several long seconds before he could speak again.
"Are you saying..."
She blinked, clearing the emotion from her eyes. "I'm saying I like you very much, Stanhill. Enough that I think we deserve more time than the deadline of midnight can give us." She let go of his hand, more composed now. "I talked to my daughters and gave them a few ideas to counteract the spell. By the time we are done with dinner, one of them should be here with the antipotion." The thrill within him spilled out onto his face in an enormous smile he was helpless to contain.
"Bloody brilliant."
He offered her his arm.
"Shall we dine, then? The doors are open and our table awaits."
Just as he hoped their future did. The weight of the engagement ring in his pocket felt less like a burden and more like a medal of honor. This gorgeous creature was going to be his wife. He felt sure of it. She took his arm. "Lead the way."
The caterers, a team of chefs that Eleonora flew in from Europe every year, outdid themselves with the meal, and Corette, who was never one to overindulge in anything, found herself pushing away the last course with more than half of it left but nowhere to put it. Thankfully, Delaney's beautiful cake would be served later.
"That was one of the most amazing meals I've ever had."
"Agreed."
Hugh Ellingham folded his napkin and set it under the edge of his plate.
"Should be, for the money it cost,"
Sebastian Ellingham grumped. Corette bit the inside of her cheek to keep from laughing. Sebastian didn't leave his house much, but his grandmother's events were apparently mandatory. If he ever smiled, he might be handsome. Thankfully, Eleonora herself was seated several tables away with the mayor, several town council members, and their wives. Alice was nowhere to be seen. Julian Ellingham, the playboy of the family, had come without a date. Judging from the way his gaze purposefully roamed the room every few minutes, his stag status was intentional. He sprawled in his seat, a glass of champagne held lazily between his fingers.
"Lighten up, Sebastian. We can afford it. Things are going very well.
How would you know? You've spent more time travelling lately than here, Sebastian shot back.
I've spent a few weekends in Vegas. Unbunch your britches.
Well, my apologies. Gambling is an excellent way to spend your time. Sebastian's sarcasm was clear. And how do you know things are going well? You don't keep the books?
No, but I interact with the tourists. I keep them happy.
Especially the female ones, Delaney snarked. Julian grinned.
I'm just saying the town has never run short of visitors. Hotel reservations are up. In fact, there's a new bed and breakfast opening up, a few blocks off Main. Business is booming.
My shop is doing great, Delaney added. How's business at Ever After, Corette?
Very good. Bridal is always good, even more so now that we've become a wedding destination.
She turned to Julian.
The moment felt right to mention something she'd been thinking about for a while. You know, a wedding chapel in town wouldn't be a bad idea.
He nodded, and for a moment his gaze went very far away, like he was remembering something. Then his eyes brightened.
That's not a bad idea. We could ordain a few of the supernaturals. Let folks have their choice of who will marry them. Vampire, werewolf, that sort of thing. We could have a few different themed rooms. Victorian Goth.
He spread his hands wide like he was envisioning it.
Tim Burton Funky. Haunted Mansion.
Sebastian groaned.
And what's this going to cost?
Who cares? Julian asked. It'll make money and bring more people in.
Hugh put his arm around Delaney. Nocturne Falls is a wonderful place to get married. She kissed his cheek. I love when you get sentimental. Sebastian rolled his eyes and tossed his napkin down.
Spare me. Marriage is a trap. We don't all feel that way, Stanhill said.
No, we certainly don't. Corette gave Sebastian a stern look.
My business is based on the very opposite of that, you scoundrel. Just because you're unhappy doesn't mean the rest of us are.
With a frown, Sebastian shoved his chair back and stalked off. Hugh snorted.
Well said, Corette. I say.
Stanhill beamed at her, giving her a moment of pride.
Sebastian could use a little more of that kind of talk.
Julian sighed.
I worry about him. All alone in that big old house with nothing but numbers to keep him company. If he just get over her...
Delaney gave his shoulder a little shove.
Hush now. You know we're not supposed to say her name.
Then she smiled.
Back to this wedding chapel business. I want the exclusive on providing the cakes.
Corette nodded.
And as it was my idea, I believe Ever After should be the only recommended boutique.
Delaney nodded.
And Willa already sells amazing rings. We could talk to her about expanding her selection, maybe offering chapel couples a discount.
She glanced around.
Where are Willa and Nick tonight?
We'll have to find her and add her to the discussion.
Julian nodded and waved a hand, but his attention was elsewhere. Yes, yes, we'll work it all out. I'm sure the two of you will end up owning the place and having everyone in town involved before it's all said and done.
Suddenly he perked up.
Well, now, I believe I see a very lonely woman at the bar.
Delaney twisted to look.
That's Bridget Merrow. And the guy just behind her is Sam Kincaid, the brother of the sheriff's wife, who just so happens to have a not-so-secret crush on Bridget.
She turned back around.
You're really going to go after a werewolf, who's also the sheriff's sister, and do it right in front of the guy who's sweet on her?
Not Bridget. Egads, no. The petite brunette on the other side of her.
He put his glass down, stood, and adjusted his tux.
How do I look? Like a dog in heat, Stanhill said. Let the poor woman be, whoever she is.
Julian popped an eyebrow. And deny her the pleasure of all this? I think not, old man.
He squared his shoulders and made his way to the bar, leaving the four of them alone.
Stanhill turned to Corette.
How about a stroll in the gardens? Give that dinner a chance to digest before we show the children what dancing's supposed to look like.
Sounds lovely. Wait a moment, my purse is buzzing.
Corette retrieved her phone and read the message. She glanced at Stanhill, tenuous excitement coursing through her. Pandora had brought the formula that would hopefully return Corette's memories and her love for Stanhill.
Pandora is here. Why don't you come with me to say hi?
He nodded as he stood and helped her with her chair.
Oh, I'd love to. You, Delaney, we'll see you on the dance floor later.
Hugh snorted. Not if I can help it.
Delaney jabbed her elbow into her husband's side. You're dancing with me and you're going to like it.
He grinned. I do enjoy your bossy side.
We'll leave you two to work things out.
Stanhill put his hand on the small of Corette's back and eased them through the throng.
Where is she?
In the coat room. Plenty of privacy in there.
At least that way, whatever happened wouldn't be on public display.
Good idea.
Stanhill led the way, pushing the door open when they arrived and letting Corette go ahead of him. Pandora stood in the midst of the racks of coats, the air filled with an odd mix of wool and cologne.
Hey.
Corette answered her daughter with a barrage of questions.
Did it work? Did you bring it? How much ginseng did you use? You made sure it was the Siberian and not the Brazilian?
There were so many ways this could go wrong. Pandora's eyes went wide.
Mom, slow down. Yes to all that. Marigold made sure it was the right kind. It's all worked out, I promise. Very good. I'm sure you girls were careful.
Corette held her hand out.
I'm ready.
Pandora pulled a small vial from her purse. It held a few ounces of a very murky-looking substance.
Stanhill grimaced. That looks dreadful, but I guess with the bad comes the good.
Pandora lifted one shoulder in a half shrug.
Hopefully. What does that mean?
He asked. Corette turned to him.
This isn't a definite cure. It should work, but there's always a chance it might not.
He scowled.
That's damned reassuring.
Have a little faith, Pandora said.
I'm trying.
He crossed his arms. Corette unscrewed the top. Instantly, a pungent, overpowering odor wafted through the small room. She wrinkled her nose.
Here goes.
She tipped the vial back and swallowed the contents. The taste was something akin to old fish and dishwater. She finished with a grimace.
Oh, that was horrible. How do you feel?
Pandora asked.
Stanhill leaned in. Yes, love. Anything different?
Corette dabbed at the corner of her mouth with her fingers.
Nothing yet. But then not all spells have an effect you can feel.
Pandora produced a bottle of water from her bag.
Here, I thought you'd want to get rid of the taste. Thank you.
Corette took the bottle and a grateful sip to wash the lingering taste from her tongue. Pandora cleared her throat. Charisma thinks Stanhill should kiss you again now, and I agree. Your reaction could tell us whether or not the potion worked.
Stanhill smiled.
I'm game if you are.
Corette handed the bottle of water back to Pandora and smiled. Kissing him now didn't seem nearly as odd a suggestion as it had at the beginning of the night, nor did it give her any pause. Maybe that was a sign that the potion was already working.
I suppose we've no other way, she teased.
He held out his hand. She took it and let him draw her into a gentle embrace. His eyes held desire and hope, a very attractive look. He pressed his lips to hers, and she let herself fall into the insistent caress of his mouth. A flash of energy zipped through her, as hot and bright as a shooting star. Magic? Desire? Love? She clung to him, blinking as he broke the kiss, trying to catch her breath and make sense of what was going on.
Well? He asked.
Chapter 4 Stanhill waited, almost unable to breathe with the not knowing. The woman in his arms blinked up at him, a little too deer in the headlights for his liking.
Pandora stepped toward them.
Mom, how do you feel?
Corette extracted herself from Stanhill's arms and tugged her dress into alignment. Rather odd, considering I've just been kissed by a man I don't know while standing in a coat room with my daughter. She glared at Pandora. What on earth is going on? Stanhill scrubbed a hand over his face as disbelief coursed through him. Are you bleeding kidding me? She doesn't know who I am again? That was not supposed to happen. Pandora frowned. Bother. Double bother. She held her hand up. Stanhill, give me a minute alone with her, would you please? He nodded and sighed and left the coat room, closing the door behind him and leaning heavily on the wall. It was nearly impossible to hold on to any kind of hope with this setback. Midnight loomed like a grasping hand, ready to snatch his love away. What chance did he have now of finding a good moment to ask her to marry him when they were back at square one? That idea seemed more foolish by the minute. He rubbed the back of his neck and closed his eyes, wishing the answer would magically appear. Hey, you're not pooped out already, are you? He opened his eyes at the sound of Delaney's bright voice. No, love, just... But he couldn't find an excuse that made any sense. Concern filled her gaze. Stanhill, what's wrong? He sighed and looked away. What was the point of keeping this mess a secret any longer? He'd have to explain at some point why Corette no longer wanted anything to do with him. There was an accident earlier, a mishap with a spell the girls were casting, and Corette ended up being affected by it. She doesn't love me anymore. What? Delaney's mouth fell open in horror. Oh, that's just awful. It does explain the distance between you two at dinner, though. That noticeable? She shrugged. I live in the same house as you. I've seen you two together enough to know how you usually act around each other. Good point. He sighed. I don't know what I'm going to do. She threw her arms around Stanhill and hugged him. I'm so sorry. She smelled of warm vanilla. Thank you, love. She pushed back from him suddenly. But hey, you'll make her fall for you again. How could she not? You're funny and handsome and easily one of the best catches in all of Nocturne Falls. He smiled with more hope than he felt. It's not that easy. He explained the details. Delaney's look of horror returned. Oh, no, that can't be right. He shook his head. Unfortunately, it is. She went silent a long moment. Then she punched him in the arm, hard. He grabbed the spot. What was that for? And bloody hell, did you forget how strong you are as a vampire? Yeah, maybe. Sorry. It still kind of slips my mind. She pointed her finger at him, her brows bent in stern concentration. And that was for you being all pessimistic and giving up. You're not a quitter, Bartholomew Stanhill. The fact that you still give Captain Underpants bacon every morning, despite the fact that I tell you not to, is proof of that. The thought of Delaney's black-and-white beast of a cat made him smile for a second. I'm not quitting. I'm facing reality. Midnight is less than 2 hours away. How am I supposed to make her fall in love with me in that amount of time? She already loves you. Just because she can't remember those feelings doesn't mean they aren't still there. You have to help her remember. Show her exactly how you feel about her. Tell her stories about things you've done. Remind her of all the good times. Love, I've been doing that all night. So, do it again. She crossed her arms and stared at him. You still love her, don't you? He smiled, then grabbed her shoulders and kissed her firmly on both cheeks. You're the bee's knees, you know that? I was wallowing. Thank you for pulling me out of that rubbish. She grinned. We all need a hand up once in a while. The door to the coat room opened, and Pandora started to say something, then saw Delaney and stopped. Stanhill shook his head. It's all right, I told her. Delaney's family, Corette. Don't be mad. Corret smiled weakly at Delaney before looking at Stanhill.
I'm not mad.
She took a deep breath.
Pandora explained everything. About the spell, about you, about us.
And? Stanhill asked.
Corret's smile strengthened, and she lifted her chin.
I guess it's time to start over.
Corret enjoyed Stanhill's patience with her almost as much as she enjoyed his stories. Didn't hurt that his voice brushed over her like a vocal caress. She could hear how much he cared for her, see it in his eyes, feel it in the subtle and not-so-subtle ways he found to touch her. But love wasn't something that could be forced, and they both knew it. The knowledge was evident, the same way his love was. A half-hitch in a word during the retelling of a poignant memory, the sudden darkening of hope in his eyes, the hesitant way he took his hand off her arm, like it might be the last time. A current of desperation underlay everything, and they were powerless to shake it. She wondered, for a moment, if those left behind by the Titanic's lifeboats had felt like this. She ought to love him. She had, apparently, up until tonight. And who wouldn't love this man? He was kind and funny, gentle and sweet, impossibly sexy, and wickedly charming. He wasn't the kind of man you kept on a string for bored evenings, or spoke to just enough to keep things alive. He was the kind of man you married, and cherished, and spent the rest of your life with, if you were lucky. And she had been. She'd just gotten very unlucky this evening. She rested her head on his shoulder as they danced in a blissfully slow spiral around the enormous ballroom. The other couples around them fell away, and for the moment, they were the only two people in the room. His hand pressed her closer.
You're a wonderful partner, as light on your feet as a summer breeze.
She smiled, the fabric of his tux silky on her cheek. He was marvelously muscled underneath that fancy suit. Coming from someone with your years of experience, that's a lovely compliment. The song came to an end. She lifted her head, and new sadness filled her, but she smiled anyway. He took her hand and twined his fingers with hers.
We never did get that walk in the gardens. Still up for it? It'll be gorgeous out there this time of night. The stars are really something out here in the country.
She nodded. That would be perfect. He kept hold of her hand and led her through the house. Normally she'd be fascinated by the mansion, taking every opportunity to study the opulent home. But tonight, the only thing that made any sense was to pay attention to Stanhill. They came to a bank of French doors that overlooked an expansive outdoor terrace. He pushed one open and waited for her to go through. She stepped out and took a deep breath. The air was crisp and just cold enough to be bracing but not unbearable. A wisp of fog curled from her mouth when she exhaled.
I should have grabbed my wrap.
Chilly, eh?
He closed the door behind them and shucked his jacket to place it over her shoulders.
Not anymore. Thank you for the coat.
She could have cast a spell to keep herself warm, but this was so much better, and she was a little mad at magic right now. She pulled the jacket tighter around her.
Won't you be cold?
Being a rook makes me fairly immune to temperature issues.
He nodded at her.
Slip your arms through, or it's going to be rubbish trying to hold your hand.
She laughed softly and did as he asked, tucking her bag under one arm. He took her hand and gave it a little squeeze.
Nearly midnight.
She swallowed.
I know.
Have you checked your phone? Any messages from the girls?
She dropped his hand and took her phone from her purse. The screen was blank, no notifications. She smiled, thin-lipped and tight, as she dropped the phone back into her bag.
Nothing new.
He took a deep breath, nodding slowly, then held his hand out to her.
Let's walk.
She took his hand in response, and they headed down the stone steps and into the garden. There were no words between them. How could there be, with the heavy air of inevitability and the pressing weight of their immediate future bearing down on them? They came to a stop at the fountain in the center of the garden. Unlike the fountain in town, this one had no gargoyles, real or otherwise. The bubbling of the water would have been a soothing sound any other evening. But as they stood in front of the fountain, Corette's sense of unease grew. She stared into the water. "I'm sorry about all this."
"It's not your fault, love."
He sighed and put his arm around her shoulders.
"But I'm sorry about it, too."
"It's so unfair. I'm not going to know who you are, or be able to acknowledge you, and you're such a wonderful man." She looked up at him. "You don't deserve to be forgotten."
He smiled. Sadness clouded his eyes, but she could tell he was putting on a brave face for her. "Thank you."
She studied him. "Why haven't you asked?"
His smile faltered. "Asked? What?"
"If I've fallen in love with you again."
His gaze shifted back to the fountain. "Didn't seem like my place. Thought you might think it was pushy too." He shook his head. "I do love you, Corette. I suspect I always will."
"Oh, Stanhill, that's a horrible thing to tell me. Wonderful, but horrible."
She sniffed.
"I feel awful."
She did, like a part of her life was coming to an end, which it was. She sniffed again, her eyes burning with unshed tears. For the first time in her life, she was cross about being a witch. For all her gifts, she was powerless to help herself. A single angry tear trickled down her cheek.
"Now, now, don't cry."
He pointed at the jacket. "There's a handkerchief in the pocket there. It'll be midnight before you know it. Let's go out on a happy note."
She dug into the pocket, but all she found was a little velvet box. She pulled it out. "What's this?"
His eyes rounded slightly. "Nothing, love. Must be cufflinks or something I left in the pocket."
She opened the box and gasped. An enormous blue sapphire, surrounded by sparkling diamonds, twinkled up at her. "This isn't nothing. This is an engagement ring."
He swallowed but didn't say a word.
She looked at him. "Goddess, help me. You were going to propose tonight, weren't you?"
He stayed still for a long minute. Then he sighed and nodded, the pain in his eyes clearly visible. "I was."
A surge of panic ran through her. "What time is it?"
He glanced at his watch. 11:53.
She snapped the box shut and stuffed it back in the jacket pocket. "Kiss me. Before I forget you forever, kiss me. Maybe the universe will smile down on me, and I'll be able to remember that much of you."
Stanhill didn't need to be told twice. He swept Corette into his arms, cradling her lush form with one hand on her back and the other on the curve of her divine hip. He kissed her, devouring her mouth with the kind of passion he'd been holding back all evening. If this was the last time he was ever going to kiss her, then bollocks, he was going to give it everything he had. She moaned in pleasure, a noise that was very un-Corette, at least the Corette who was currently in his arms. The Corette he'd been intimate with made that sound often enough that he'd come to recognize it as his cue to keep doing whatever he was doing. In this case, he kept kissing her. She clung to him, holding on as if for dear life. But best of all, she kissed him back. Maybe in those last few moments, she had fallen in love with him again. Sadly, he'd never know. It was too late. Fireworks punctuated that thought as they erupted in the sky above them. A black and orange ball tradition that occurred every year at the same time. Midnight. Pain racked his body, the sensation of his heart being torn in two. He released her, almost afraid to look into her eyes.
so for the moment he kept his focus lower. Color spilled over her in washes of light as the fireworks continued to explode in the sky. Questions pummeled his brain with the same intensity. Would she look through him, or think he was someone else, or worse? He finally shifted his gaze to hers. Her lids were heavy, her chest rising and falling with what he hoped was the exhilaration of the kiss. She put her hand to her heart as her eyes rose to meet his. She tipped her head to one side. "Did you just kiss me?" And so it began. He nodded, wondering who she thought he was. "Yes." Another boomer went off over their heads, showering them in a glittering spray of silver light. She stared at him. "You either literally kissed my brains out, or I've had too much to drink. Everything seems so foggy." She put a hand out, taking hold of his arm as she glanced around. "We're at the Black and Orange Ball, right?"
Now this was just odd. "Yes, we've been here all night."
She blinked a few times, then looked back at him. "How much have I had to drink? I swear, my darling, I cannot remember how I got here. I feel like a bit of a ninny. I don't feel drunk, but I must be."
"My darling?"
He stared at her.
"Are you telling me you don't remember anything that's transpired this evening?"
Her brows knit together, and she frowned. "Not really. There are moments here and there. We sat down to dinner."
He nodded.
"Then I think we were in the coat room together, with Pandora, although I can't imagine why."
"Yes, we were."
He was on the verge of hope, but he'd been there before too many times this evening and ended up disappointed. She gave him a funny little half-smile. "Beyond that, I'm not sure."
"What's the first thing you remember, clearly?"
"I had just finished getting ready when I went downstairs to show the girls my dress. They were working on a spell, something someone in town had ordered." She blinked up at him. "You know, it goes pretty dark after that."
He wanted to whoop and yell and carry on like a football hooligan, but his breathing restrained him. Instead, he smiled. "My dear, I don't know how, but something very good has happened."
"Oh?" She smiled full on this time and leaned into him. "Tell me." He explained everything that had happened and everything that hadn't.
"And somehow, now, you're back to you again."
She tapped her fingers on his chest. "You kissed me 3 times, and after each time I forgot what had happened?"
"That's exactly right."
She nodded. "I'll tell you what happened. Love's true kiss, in its most powerful number, 3. You saved me from that horrible spell, Stanhill. You did it." She looked away, blinking at tears. "I cannot imagine forgetting you. You're everything to me. I love you beyond words. I owe you my happiness. I owe you my life." He snuck his hand into the pocket of the jacket she was still wearing, using his rook speed and stealth to do it as quickly and quietly as possible.
"Then repay me by becoming my wife."
He dropped to one knee as he opened the little box. She gasped again, just like the first time she'd seen the ring, but apparently she didn't recall that she'd already seen it. He was glad his proposal could truly be a surprise, and a moment she would actually remember. She clasped a hand to her mouth as a mule of happiness escaped. He held the ring up, the pain in his heart gone, replaced by a sense of joy so overwhelming there weren't words to describe the lightness of his being.
"I love you, Corette Williams, and I always will."
She reached down and cupped his cheek. "You are the best man I've ever known, Stanhill. It would be my great honor to marry you." He stood and slid the ring on her finger. She looked up from the ring to gaze into his face.
You know, I think I must have suspected you were going to propose tonight. I think it's why I spent so much on this dress.
She laughed as she shook her head.
I can't believe what a night it's been.
That's an understatement. He kissed her softly.
Behind them on the terrace, the French doors flew open, and Pandora, Marigold, Charisma, and Delaney came tumbling out.
Delaney pointed toward the fountain.
There they are! Stanhill! Delaney waved. Hang on, we're coming!
The four women hustled down the flagstone path as best they could in their evening wear, their high heels making a clatter on the stones like a herd of tiny stampeding horses.
Mom!
Pandora called out. Are you...
okay?
A huge smile broke out across Corette's face, and she lifted her hand to show off her ring.
I have never been better.
The four skidded to a stop, confusion marring their pretty faces. Marigold spoke first.
You're marrying a man you don't know?
Charisma was next.
That can't be the case. You know him somehow, don't you?
Corette laughed. I do. I know exactly who Stanhill is.
She gazed up at him.
He's the love of my life. Always has been, always will be.
Delaney shook her head.
But the spell?
Broken,
Corette said, as she reached out to take Charisma's hand.
By love's true kiss. Three of them, to be exact.
I knew it,
Charisma said, as she and her sisters hugged their mother.
Yes, dear, you were right,
Corette admitted.
Delaney hugged Stanhill, her eyes misty with happy tears. You did it, and you guys are getting married.
She let him go as the sisters stepped back from Corette.
Oh, I'm going to make you the best cake ever.
Pandora nodded.
And I'll cast a spell over it to make sure nothing like this ever happens again.
Stanhill put his arm around Corette, and the two of them smiled.
The cake sounds lovely, he said. But maybe we'll take a pass on the magic for now.
Pandora snorted.
Yeah, considering recent events, that's probably best.
Charisma swiped a hand through the air.
This will be a magic-free wedding if it has to be.
Marigold rocked on the balls of her feet like she'd just had an idea.
How about a bouquet of forget-me-nots?
Laughter answered her.
Corette nodded. Under the circumstances, I'd say those would be appropriate.
Stanhill looked at Corette, his gaze going serious.
I spent most of the night thinking I was going to lose you. Now I'm going to spend the rest of my life with you. I could not be happier.
He looked at the four women gathered around them.
I love each one of you for your help.
Corette leaned into him and addressed the women as well.
Yes. Thank you. Now you girls go back to the house, all of you. Go dance or eat cake or something.
She glanced at Stanhill, eyes shining with bright desire and unbridled joy.
My fiancé and I have some more kissing to do.
Author bio. Kristen Painter likes to balance her obsessions with shoes and cats by making the lives of her characters miserable and surprising her readers with interesting twists. She currently writes paranormal romance and award-winning urban fantasy. The former college English teacher can often be found all over social media, where she loves to interact with readers. This has been The Witch's Halloween Hero, a Nocturne Falls short, written by Kristen Painter. Narrated by B.J. Harrison. Copyright 2016 by Kristen Painter. Production copyright 2016 by Kristen Painter.